He yanked on the reins enough to tell her he was fully aware of her bullshit.
"I'll race you,"
he said. Irene's eyes sparkled, and to his shock she breathed, "The prize?" He could not remember the last time. The last time he had felt so aware of every bit of breath and blood simmering and thrumming in his body.
"A kiss. When and where of my choosing?"
"What do you mean, where?" Kaol only grinned and let Farasha run free. Irene cursed, more viciously than he'd ever heard her. But he didn't dare look back, not as Farasha became a black storm upon the sand. He'd never gotten to test out the Asterion. But if it was faster than this... Flying over the sand, Farasha was a bolt of dark lightning spearing across the golden desert. It was all he could do to keep up, to grit his teeth against his barking muscles. He forgot about them anyway, at the blur of reddish brown and black that emerged in the corner of his eye, and the white rider atop it. Irene's hair rose and fell behind her in a golden brown tangle of curls, lifting with each thunderous pound of her mare's legs on the hard sand. White clothes streaming in the wind, the gold and silver sparkled like stars. And her face. Kaol couldn't breathe as he beheld the wild joy on Irene's face, the unchecked exhilaration. Farasha marked the mare gaining on them, meeting them beat for beat and made to charge ahead, to leave them in the dust. He checked her with the reins and his feet, marveling that he could even do so. That the woman now closing in, now riding beside him, now beaming at him as if he were the only thing in this barren, burning sea. She had done this, given him this. Irene was smiling, and then she was laughing, as if she could not contain it inside her. Kaol thought it was the most beautiful sound he'd ever heard. And at this moment, flying together over the sands, devouring the desert wind, her hair a golden brown banner behind her, Kaol felt, perhaps for the first time, as if he was awake. And he was grateful, right down to his very bones, for it. Chapter 44. Irene was soaked in sweat, though it dried so quickly that she only felt its essence clinging. Thankfully, the oasis was shaded and cool, a large, shallow pool in its center. Horses were led into the heaviest shade to be watered and brushed down, and servants and guards claimed a hidden spot for their own washing and enjoyment. No sign of any sort of cave that Nusha had mentioned, or the city of the dead that Hasar claimed lurked in the jungle beyond. But the sight was sprawling, and in the large pool, the royals were already soaking in the cool waters. Renya, Irene saw immediately, was only wearing a thin silk shift that did little to hide her considerable assets as she emerged from the water, laughing at something Hasar said.
"Well then," Kaol said,
coughing beside Irene. "I told you about the parties," she muttered, heading to the tent spread through the towering palms and brush. They were white and gilded, each marked with the prince or princess's banner. But with Sartak and Duva not with them, Kaol and Irene had been assigned them, respectively. Mercifully, the two were near each other. But Irene took in the open tent flaps, the entire space as large as the cottage she'd shared with her mother, then turned toward Kaol's retreating back. His limp, even with the cane, was deeper than it had been that morning. And she'd seen how stiffly he'd gotten off that infernal horse. "I know you want to wash up," Irene said. "But I need to take a look at you. At your back and legs, I mean. After all that riding." Perhaps she shouldn't have raced him. She hadn't even remembered who'd reached the oasis border anyway. She'd been too busy laughing, feeling as if she were coming out of her body and would likely never feel that way again. Too busy looking at his face, filled with such light. Kaol paused at his tent flaps, cane wobbling, as if he'd put far more weight on it than he let on. But it was the relief in his face as he asked,
your tent or mine. That made her worry just a tad.
Mine, she said,
aware of the servants and nobility who likely had no idea she was even the cause of this excursion, but who would happily report her comings and goings. He nodded, and she monitored each rise and placement of his legs, the shifting of his torso, the way he leaned on that cane. As Kaol edged past her and into the tent, he murmured in her ear,
I won, by the way.
Irene glanced toward the sun now making its descent, and felt her core tighten in answer. He was sore, but could thankfully still walk by the time Irene finished her thorough examination, and set of soothing stretches for his legs and back, and massage. Kaol had the distinct feeling she was toying with him, even as her hands remained chaste, uninterested. She even had the nerve to call for a servant to ask for a jug of water. The tent was fit for the princess who usually occupied it. A large bed lay in the center upon a raised platform, the floors covered with ornate rugs. Sitting areas were scattered throughout, along with a curtained-off washing-up and privy, and there was gold everywhere. Either the servants had brought it with them yesterday, or the people of this land so feared the wrath of the Khaganate that they didn't dare rob this place, or were so well cared for they didn't need to. The others were all in the oasis pool by the time he shrugged on his now dry clothes, and they emerged to seek out their quarry. They'd whispered in the tent. Neither of them had spotted anything of interest upon arrival. And in the oasis pool, definitely no indication of a cave or ruins near the bathing royals and their friends. Comfortable. Relaxed. Free in ways that Otterlin had never been, to its detriment. He wasn't naive enough to think that no scheming or intrigue was now playing out in the cool waters. But he'd never heard of Otterlanian nobles going to a swimming hole and enjoying themselves. Though he certainly wondered what the hell Hasar was thinking in throwing such a party for Irene. Manipulated into it or no, considering the princess was well aware Irene barely knew most of those gathered. Irene hesitated at the edge of the clearing and glanced at him beneath lowered lashes, a look anyone might interpret as shy. A woman perhaps hesitant to strip down to the light clothes they wore in the waters, letting any onlookers forget that she was a healer and wholly used to far more skin showing.
I find I'm not up to bathing,
Irene murmured over the laughter and splashing of those within the oasis waters.
Care for a walk?
Pleasant, polite words as she inclined her head through the few acres of untamed jungle sprawling to the left. She didn't think herself a courtier, but she certainly could lie well enough. He supposed that as a healer, it was a skill that proved useful.
It would be my pleasure, Kaol said, offering his arm.
Irene hesitated again, the portrait of modesty, peering over her shoulder at those in the pool, the royals watching, caution included. He would let her choose when and how to make it clear to the prince, again, that she was not interested, though he couldn't avoid a faint tinge of guilt as she looped her arm through his, and they stepped into the murkiness of the oasis jungle. Kashin was a good man. Kaol doubted his words about being willing to go to war were lies, and to risk antagonizing the prince by perhaps flaunting what he had with Irene. Kaol glanced sidelong at her, his cane digging into the roots and soft soil. She offered him a faint smile, cheeks still flushed with the sun. To hell with worrying over antagonizing caution. The oasis springs gurgling blended with the sighing palms overhead, as they headed deeper between the fauna, picking their own way, no direction in mind.
In Aniel, he said, there are dozens of hot springs along the valley floor, near the Silver Lake, kept warm by the vents in the earth. When I was a boy, we'd often soak in them after a day of training.
She asked carefully, as if realizing that he'd indeed offered up this piece of him.
Was it that training that inspired you to join the guard?
His voice was thick, as he finally said.
Part of it. I was just good at it. fighting and fencing and archery and all of it. I received the training that was befitting for the heir of a lord to a mountain people who had long fended off wild men from the fangs. But my real training began when I arrived in Rifthold and joined the royal guard. She slowed while he navigated around a tricky nest of roots, letting him focus on where to place his feet and the cane. I suppose being stubborn and bullheaded made you a good pupil for the discipline aspect. Kaol chuckled, nudging her with his elbow.
It did. I was the first one on the training pitch and the last one off, even though I was walloped every single day.
His chest tightened as he remembered their faces. Those men who had trained him, who had pushed and pushed him, left him limping and bleeding, and then made sure he got patched up in the barracks that night, usually with a hearty meal and a clap on the back. And it was in honor of those men, his brothers, that he said hoarsely,
"They weren't all bad men, Irene. The ones I grew up with, whom I commanded. They were good men."
He saw Ress's laughing face, the blush the young guard could never hide around Aelin. His eyes burned. Irene stopped, the oasis humming around them. And his back and legs were more than grateful for the reprieve as she removed her arm from his, touched his cheek.
"If they are partially responsible for you being you," she said,
rising up to brush her mouth against his,
"then I believe that they are."
"Were,"
he breathed. And there it was. That one word, swallowed by the loam and shade of the oasis, that he could barely stand.
"Were."
He could still retreat. Retreat from this invisible precipice now before them. Irene remained standing close, a hand resting over his heart, waiting for him to decide whether to speak. And maybe it was only because she held her hand over his heart that he whispered,
"They were tortured for weeks this spring, then butchered, and left to hang from the castle gates."
Grief and horror guttered in her eyes. He could hardly stomach it as he managed to go on.
"Not one of them broke. When the king and others..."
He could not bring himself to finish. Not yet. Perhaps not ever, to face that suspicion and likely truth.
"When they questioned the guards about me, not a single one of them broke."
He didn't have words for it. That courage. That sacrifice. Irene's throat bobbed, and she cupped his cheek. And Kaol finally breathed.
"It was my fault. The king. He did it to punish me. For running. For helping the rebels in Rifthold. It was all because of me."
"You can't blame yourself."
Simple, honest words. And utterly untrue. They snapped him back into himself, more effectively than a thrown bucket of cold water. Kaol pushed out of her touch. He shouldn't have told her. Shouldn't have brought it up, on her birthday, gods above. While they were supposed to focus on finding any sort of scrap of information that might help them. He'd brought his sword and dagger, and as he limped into the palms and ferns, leaving Irene to follow, he checked to ensure they were both still buckled at his waist. Checked them because he had to do something with his shaking hands, his raw insides. He folded the words, the memories back into himself. Deeper. Sealed them away as he counted his weapons, one after another. Irene only trailed him, saying nothing while they picked their way deeper into the jungle. The entire site was larger than many villages, and yet little of the green had been tamed. Certainly no path to be found, or indication of a city of the dead beneath them. Until fallen pale pillars began to appear between the roots and bushes. A good sign, he supposed. If there were a cave, it might be nearby, perhaps as some ancient dwelling. But the level of architecture they climbed over and walked around, forcing him to select his steps carefully.
"These weren't some cave-dwelling people who buried their dead in holes," he observed,
cane scraping over the ancient stone. Hassar said it was a city of the dead. Irene frowned at the ornate columns and slabs of carved stone, crusted with forest life. A sprawling necropolis right beneath our feet. He studied the jungle floor.
But I thought the Coggins people left their dead under the open sky, in the heart of their home territory.
They do.
Irene ran her hands over a pillar carved with animals and strange creatures.
But this site predates the Khaganate, the Torre and Antica, too.
To whoever was here before.
A set of crumbling steps led to a platform where the trees had grown through the stone itself, knocking over carved columns in their wake. Hassar claimed the tunnels are all clever traps, either designed to keep looters out or keep the dead inside.
Despite the heat, the hair on his arms rose.
You're telling me this now?
I assumed Nusha meant something different, that it would be a cave. And if it was connected to these ruins, she'd have mentioned it.
Irene stepped onto the platform, and his legs protested as he followed her up.
But I don't see any sort of rock formations here.
None large enough for a cave. The only stone.
It's from this.
The sprawling gateway into the necropolis beneath, Hassar had claimed. They surveyed the mangled complex. The enormous pillars now broken or covered in roots and vines. Silence lay as heavy as the shaded heat, as if none of the singing birds or humming insects from the oasis dared venture here.
It's unsettling, she murmured.
They had 20 guards within shouting distance, and yet he found his free hand drifting toward his sword. If a city of the dead slumbered beneath their feet, perhaps Hassar was right. They should be left to sleep.
Irene turned in place, surveying the pillars, the carvings. No caves.
None at all.
Nusha knew the location, though, she mused. It must have been important. The site. To the Torre.
But its importance was forgotten over time, or warped. So that only the name, the sense of its importance, remained.
Healers were always drawn to this realm, you know, Irene said distantly, running a hand over a column. The land just blessed them with the magic. More than any other kind. As if this were some breeding ground for healing.
Why?
She traced a carving on a column longer than most ships.
Why does anything thrive? Plants grow best in certain conditions, those most advantageous to them.
And the southern continent is a place for healers to thrive?
Something had snagged her interest, making her words mumbled as she said,
Maybe it was a sanctuary.
He approached, wincing at the slicing pain down his spine. It was forgotten as he examined the carving beneath her palm. Two opposing forces had been etched into the column's broad face. On the left, tall, broad-shouldered warriors, armed with swords and shields, with rippling flame and bursting water. Animals of all kinds in the air are at their knees. Pointed ears. Those were pointed ears on the figures' heads. And facing them.
You said nothing is coincidence.
Irene pointed to the army facing the Fey one. Smaller than the Fey. Their bodies bulkier. Claws and fangs and wicked-looking blades. She mouthed a word. Vog.
Holy gods.
Irene rushed to the other pillars, ripping away vines and dirt. More Fey faces. Figures. Some were depicted in one-on-one battles against Vog commanders. Some felled by them. Some triumphing. Kaol moved with her as much as he could manage.
Looking.
Looking. There, tucked into the dense shadows of squatting thick palms, a square crumbling structure. A mausoleum.
A cave,
Irene whispered. Or what might have been interpreted as one, as knowledge turned muddled. Kaol ripped away the vines for her with his free hand, his back protesting. Ripped and tore them down to survey what had been carved into the gates of the necropolis.
Nusha said legend claimed some of those scrolls came from here, Kaol said. From a place full of word marks, of carvings of the Fey and Volg. But this was no living city, so they had to have been removed from tombs or archives below our feet. From the doorway just beyond them. They did not bury humans here, Irene whispered. For the markings on the sealed stone gates. The old language. He'd seen it inked on Rowan's face and arm. This was a Fey burial site. Fey, not human. Kaol said, I thought only one group of Fey ever left Doranau, to establish Terrasen with Brannan.
Maybe another settled here, during whatever this war was.
The First War. The first demon war before Elena and Gavin were born. Before Terrasen. Kaol studied Irene. Her bloodless face. Or maybe they wanted to hide something. Irene frowned at the ground as if she could see to the tombs beneath.
A treasure?
Of a different sort. She met his eyes at his tone, his stillness, and fear, cool and sharp, slid into his heart. Irene said softly,
I don't understand.
Fey magic is passed down through their bloodlines. It doesn't appear at random. Perhaps these people came here, and then were forgotten by the world, forces good and evil. Perhaps they knew this place was far away enough to remain untouched, that wars would be waged elsewhere, by them.
He jerked his chin to a carving of a Volg soldier,
while the southern continent remained mostly mortal-held, while the seeds planted here by the Fey were bred into the human bloodlines, and grew into a people gifted and prone to healing magic.
An interesting theory, she said hoarsely. But you don't know if it could stand to reason.
If you wanted to hide something precious, wouldn't you conceal it in plain sight? In a place where you were willing to bet a powerful force would spring up to defend it? Like an empire. Several of them. Whose walls had not been breached by outside conquerors for the entirety of its history. Who would see the value of its healers and think their gift was for one thing, but never know that it might be a treasure waiting to be used at another time. A weapon.
We do not kill.
No, Kaol said, his blood going cold. But you and all the healers here. There is only one other such place in the world. Guarded as heavily, protected by a power just as mighty.
Doranau. The Fey healers in Doranau.
Guarded by Maeve, fiercely. Who had fought in that first war. Who had fought against the Volg.
What does it mean?
She breathed. Kaol had the sense of the ground slipping from beneath him. I was sent here to retrieve an army. But I wonder... I wonder if some other force brought me to retrieve something else.
She slid her hand into his, a silent promise,
one he'd think of later.
Perhaps that is why whoever it is that's been stalking the Torre was hunting me,
Irene whispered.
If they are indeed sent from Morath, they don't want us realizing any of this, through healing you.
He squeezed her fingers. And those scrolls in the library. Either they were taken or brought from here, forgotten save for legend about where they came from, where the healers of this land might have originated from.
Not the necropolis, but the Fey people who had built it. The scrolls, she blurted. If we return and find someone to translate them.
They might explain this, what the healers could do against the Volg.
She swallowed. Hafiza. I wonder if she knows what those scrolls are somehow. The healer on high is not just a position of power, but of learning. She's a walking library herself. Taught things by her predecessor that no one else at the Torre knows.
She twisted a curl around a finger.
It's worth showing her some of the texts, to see if she might know what they are.
A gamble to share the information with anyone else, but one worth taking. Kaol nodded. Someone's laughter pierced through even the heavy silence of the oasis. Irene released his hand.
We'll need to smile, enjoy ourselves amongst them, and then leave at first light.
I'll send word to Nezrin to return, as soon as we're back. I'm not sure we can afford any longer to wait for the Kagan's aid.
We'll try to convince him again anyway, she promised.
He angled his head.
You will still have to win this war, Kaol, she said quietly, regardless of what role we might play.
He brushed a thumb over her cheek.
I have no intention of losing it.
It was no easy task to pretend that they had not stumbled across something enormous, that something had not rattled them down to their bones. Hasar grew bored of bathing and called for music and dancing and lunch, which turned into hours of lounging in the shade, listening to the musicians, eating an array of delicacies that Irene had no idea how they'd managed to bring all the way out here. But as the sun set, they all dispersed into their tents to change for dinner. After what she'd learned with Kaol, even being alone for a moment had her jumpy. But Irene washed and changed into the purple gauzy gown Hasar had provided. Kaol was waiting outside the tent. Hasar had brought him clothes, too. Beautiful deep blue that brought out the gold in his brown eyes, the summer-kissed tan of his skin. Irene blushed, as his gaze slid along her neckline to the swaths of skin the flowing folds of the dress revealed along her waist, her thighs. Silver and clear beads had been sewn onto the entire thing, making the gown shimmer like the stars now flickering to life in the night sky above them. Torches and lanterns had been lit around the oasis pool, tables and couches and cushions brought out. Music was playing. People were already losing themselves upon the feast laid across the various tables, with Hasar holding court, regal as any queen from her spot at the centermost table along the fire-gilded pool. She spotted Irene and signaled her over. Kaol, too. Two seats had been left open to the princess's right. Irene could have sworn Kaol sized them up with each step, as if scanning the chairs, those around them, the oasis itself for any pitfalls or threats. His hand brushed the sliver of skin exposed on the column of her spine, as if in confirmation that all was clear.
You did not think I forgot my honored guest, did you?
Hasar said, kissing her cheeks.
Kaol bowed to the princess as much as he could manage, and claimed his seat on Irene's other side, leaning his cane against the table.
Today has been wonderful,
Irene said, and wasn't lying.
Thank you.
Hasar was quiet for a beat, looking Irene over with unusual softness.
I know I am not an easy person to care for, or an easy friend to have, she said,
her dark eyes meeting Irene's at last.
But you have never once made me feel that way.
Irene's throat tightened at the bald words. Hasar inclined her head, waving to the party around them.
This is the least I can do, to honor my friend.
Renya gently patted Hasar's arm, as if in approval and understanding. So Irene bowed her head and said to the princess,
I have no interest in easy friends, easy people. I think I trust them less than the difficult ones, and find them far less compelling, too.
That brought a grin to Hasar's face. She leaned down the table to survey Kaol and drawl,
You look quite handsome, Lord Westfall.
And you are looking beautiful, Princess.
Hasar, while well-dressed, would never be called such. But she accepted the compliment with that cat smile that somehow reminded Irene of that stranger in Inish. That knowledge that beauty was fleeting, yet power. Power was a far more valuable currency. The feast unfolded, and Irene suffered through a not-so-unguarded toast from Hasar to her dear, loyal, clever friend. But she drank with them. Kaol, too. Wine and honey ale. Their glasses refilled before Irene could even notice the near-silent reach of the servants pouring.
It took all of 30 minutes before talk of the war started.
Argon began it first. A mocking toast to safety and serenity in such tumultuous times.
Irene drank, but tried to hide her surprise as she found Kaol doing so as well. A vague smile plastered on his face. Then Hisar began musing on whether the Western Wastes, with everyone so focused upon the eastern half of the continent, was fair game to interested parties.
Kaol only shrugged. As if he'd reached some conclusion this afternoon. Some realization about this war, and the role of these royals in it.
Hisar seemed to notice, too. And for all that this was meant to be a birthday party, the princess pondered aloud to no one in particular. Perhaps Aelin Galathinius should drag her esteemed self down here and select one of my brothers to marry. Perhaps then we would consider assisting her, if such influence remained in the family.
Meaning all that flame, all that brute power, tied to this continent, bred into the bloodline, never to be a threat.
My brothers would have to stomach being with someone like that, of course, Hisar went on. But they are not such weak-blooded men as you might believe.
A glance at Caution, who seemed to pretend not to hear, even as Argon snorted.
Irene wondered if the others knew how adept Caution was at drowning out their taunting, that he never fell for their baiting simply because he couldn't be bothered to care.
Kaol answered Hisar with equal mildness.
As interesting as it would be to see Aelin Galathinius deal with all of you.
A secret, knowing smile. As if Kaol might very well enjoy seeing that sight. As if Aelin might very well make blood sport out of them all.
Marriage is not an option for her.
Hisar's brows lifted.
To a man?
Renya gave her a sharp look that Hisar ignored.
Kaol chuckled. To anyone. Beyond her beloved.
King Dorian, Argon said, swirling his wine.
I'm surprised she can stomach him.
Kaol stiffened, but shook his head.
No, another prince. Foreign-born and powerful.
All the royals stilled. Even Caution looked their way.
Who, pray tell, is that?
Hisar sipped her wine, those keen eyes darkening.
Prince Rowan Whitethorn of Dorinel, former commander to Queen Maeve and a member of her royal household.
Irene could have sworn the blood drained wholly from Argon's face.
Aelin Galathinius is to wed Rowan Whitethorn?
From the way the prince said the name, he'd indeed heard of this Rowan. Kaol had mentioned Rowan more than once in passing. Rowan, who had managed to heal much of the damage in his spine. A fey prince, and Aelin's beloved.
Kaol shrugged. They are Kerenam, and he swore the blood oath to her.
He swore that oath to Maeve, Argon countered.
Kaol leaned back in his seat.
He did, and Aelin got Maeve to free him from it so he could swear it to her. Right in Maeve's face.
Argon and Hisar swapped glances.
How?
The former demanded. Kaol's mouth turned up at the corner.
Through the same way Aelin achieves all her ends.
He flicked his brows up.
She encircled Maeve's city in fire, and when Maeve told her that Dorinel was made of stone, Aelin simply replied that her people were not.
A chill snaked down Irene's spine.
So she is a brute and a madwoman, Hisar sniffed.
Is she? Who else has taken on Maeve and walked away, let alone gotten what they want out of it?
She would have destroyed an entire city for one man, Hisar snapped.
The most powerful pure-blooded fey male in the world,
Kaol said simply.
A worthy asset for any court, especially when they had fallen in love with each other.
Though his eyes danced as he spoke, a tremor of tension ran beneath the last words.
But Argon seized on the words. If it is a love match,
Then they risk knowing their enemies will go after him to punish her. Argon smiled, as if to say he was already thinking of doing so. Kaol snorted, and the prince straightened.
Good luck to anyone who tries to go after Rowan Whitethorn.
Because Aelin will burn them to ash?
Hassar asked with poisoned sweetness. But it was Caution who answered softly.
Because Rowan Whitethorn will always be the person who walks away from that encounter, not the assailant.
A pause of silence.
Then Hassar said, Well, if Aelin cannot represent her continent, perhaps we shall look elsewhere.
She smirked at Caution.
Perhaps Irene Towers might be offered in the queen's stead.
I am not noble-born,
Irene blurted,
or royal.
Hassar had lost her mind. Hassar shrugged.
I'm sure Lord Westfall, as Hand, can find you a title. Make you a countess or duchess or whatever terms you call them. Of course, we'd know you were little more than a milkmaid dressed in jewels. But if it stayed amongst us, I'm sure there are some here who would not mind your humble beginnings.
She'd done as much with Renya. For Renya. The amusement faded from Kaol's face.
You sound as if you now want to be a part of this war, princess.
Hassar waved a hand.
I am merely musing on the possibilities.
She surveyed Irene in Caution, and the food in Irene's stomach turned leaden.
I've always said you would make such beautiful children.
If they were allowed to live by your future Coggin.
A small consideration, to be later dealt with.
Caution leaned forward, his jaw tight.
The wine goes to your head, sister.
Hassar rolled her eyes.
Why not? Irene is the unspoken heir of the Torre. It is a position of power, and if Lord Westfall were to bestow upon her a royal title, say, spin a little story that her royal lineage was newly discovered, she might very well wed you,
She will not.
Kaol's words were flat.
Hard.
Color stained Caution's face, as he asked softly,
And why is that, Lord Westfall?
Kaol held the man's gaze.
She will not marry you.
Hassar smiled.
I think the lady may speak for herself.
Irene wanted to flip her chair back into the pool and sink to the bottom, and live there, under the surface, forever. Rather than face the prince waiting for an answer, the princess who was smirking like a demon, and the lord whose face was hard with rage. But if it was a serious offer, if doing something like that could lead them to the full might of the southern continent's armies coming to help them, save them.
Don't you even consider it,
Kaol said too quietly.
She's full of shit.
People gasped. Hassar barked a laugh. Argon snapped.
You will speak with respect to my sister, or you will find yourself with legs that don't work again.
Kaol ignored them. Irene's hands shook badly enough that she slid them beneath the table. Had the princess brought her out here to corner her into agreeing to this preposterous idea? Or had it merely been a whim? An idle thought to taunt and gnaw at Lord Westfall. Kaol seemed to be on the verge of opening his mouth to say more, to push this ridiculous idea out of her head. But he hesitated. Not because he agreed, Irene realized, but because he wanted to give her the space to choose for herself. A man used to giving orders, to being obeyed. And yet Irene had the sense that this, too, was new to him. The patience. The trust. And she trusted him. To do what he had to. To find a way to survive this war, whether with this army or another one. If it did not happen here, with these people, he'd sail elsewhere. Irene looked to Hassar, to Caution and the others, some smirking, some swapping disgusted glances, Argon most of all, revolted at the thought of sullying his family's bloodline. She trusted Kaol. She did not trust these royals. Irene smiled at Hasar, then caution.
This is very grave talk for my birthday. Why should I choose one man tonight when I have so many handsome ones in my company right now?
She could have sworn a shudder of relief went through Kaol.
Indeed,
Hasar crooned, her smile sharpening. Irene tried not to balk at the invisible fangs revealed in that smile.
Betrothals are rather odious things. Look at poor Duva, stuck with that brooding, sad-eyed princeling.
And so the conversation moved on. Irene did not glance to Caution or the others. She looked only at her constantly refilled goblet, and drank it. Or at Kaol, who appeared half-inclined to lean across Irene and flip Hasar's chair right back into the pool. But the meal passed, and Irene kept drinking. Enough so that when she stood after dessert, she had not realized precisely how much she'd imbibed. The world tipped and swayed, and Kaol steadied her with a hand on her elbow, even as he was none too steady on his feet.
"Seems like they can't hold their liquor up north," Argan said with a snort.
Kaol chuckled.
"I'd advise never to say that to someone from Terrasen. I suppose there's nothing else to do while living amongst all the snow and sheep beyond drink,"
Argan drawled, lounging in his chair.
"That may be,"
Kaol said, putting an arm on Irene's back to guide her to the trees and tents.
"But it won't stop Aelin Galathinius or Adian Ashriver from drinking you under the table."
"Or under a chair,"
Hasar crooned to Kaol. Maybe it was the wine, maybe it was the heat, or the hand on her back, or the fact that this man beside her had fought and fought and never once complained about it. Irene lunged for the princess. And though Kaol might have decided against pushing Hasar into the pool behind her, Irene had no such qualms about doing it herself. One heartbeat, Hasar was smirking up at her. The next, her legs and skirts and jewels went sky up, her shriek piercing across the dunes, as Irene shoved the princess, chair and all, into the water. Chapter 45. Irene knew she was a dead woman. Knew it the moment Hasar hit the dark water, and everyone leaped to their feet, shouting and drawing blades. Kaol had Irene behind him in an instant, a sword half out, a blade she hadn't even seen him reach for before it was in his hand. The pool was not deep, and Hasar swiftly stood, soaked and seething, teeth bared and hair utterly limp, as she pointed at Irene. No one spoke. She pointed and pointed, and Irene braced for the death order. They'd kill her, and then kill Kaol for trying to save her. She felt him sizing up all the guards, the princes, the viziers. Every person who would get in the way to the horses. Every person who might put up a fight. But a low fizzing sounded behind Irene. She looked to see Renya clutching her stomach, another hand over her mouth, as she looked at her lover and howled. Hasar whirled on Renya, who just stuck out a finger, pointing and roaring with laughter. Tears leaked from the woman's eyes. Then Caution tipped his head back and bellowed with amusement. Irene and Kaol did not dare move. Not until Hasar shoved away a servant who'd flung himself into the pool to help her, crawled back onto the paved lip, and looked Irene dead in the eye with the full wrath of all the mighty Coggins before her. Silence again. But then the princess snorted. "I was wondering when you'd grow a backbone." She walked away, trailing water behind her, Renya howling again. Irene caught Kaol's stare, watched him slowly release the hand on his sword, watched his pupil shrink again, watched him realize they were not going to die.
"With that,"
Irene said quietly,
"I think it's time for bed."
Renya paused her laughing long enough to say,
"I'd be gone before she returns."
Irene nodded, and led Kaol by the wrist back toward the trees and dark and torches.
She couldn't help but wonder if Renya and Kashin's laughter had been in part true amusement, but also a gift.
A birthday gift to keep them from the gallows. From the two people who understood best just how deadly Hasar's moods could be. Keeping her head, Irene decided, was a very good birthday gift indeed. It would have been easy for Kaol to roar at Irene, to demand how she could even think to risk her life like that. Months ago he would have. Hell, he was still debating it. Even as they slipped into her spacious tent, he continued soothing the instincts that had come bellowing to the surface the moment those guards had pressed in and reached for their swords. Some small part of him was profoundly, knee-wobblingly grateful none of those guards were ones he'd trained with these weeks, that he hadn't been forced to make that choice, cross that line between them. But he'd seen the terror in Irene's eyes, the moment she'd realized what was about to happen, what would have happened if the princess's lover and Kashin had not stepped in to defuse the situation. Kaol knew Irene had done it for him, for the mocking, hateful insult. And from the way she paced inside the tent, wending between the couches and tables and cushions, Kaol also knew she was well aware of the rest. He took up a seat on the rolled arm of a chair, leaning the cane beside it, and waited. Irene whirled toward him, stunning in that purple gown, which had nearly knocked his knees from beneath him when she'd first appeared from the tent. Not just for how well it suited her, but the swaths of supple skin, the curves, the light and color of her.
"Before you begin shouting," Irene declared, "I should say that what just happened is proof that I should not be marrying a prince."
Kaol crossed his arms. "Having lived with a prince for most of my life, I'd say quite the opposite." She waved a hand, pacing more.
"I know it was stupid."
"Incredibly." Irene hissed. Not at him. The memory. The temper.
"I don't regret doing it."
A smile tugged on his mouth. "It's an image I'll likely remember for the rest of my life." He would. The way Hasar's feet had gone over her head, her shrieking face right before she hit the water.
"How can you be so amused?"
"Oh, I'm not." His lips indeed curved. "But it's certainly entertaining to see that temper of yours turned on someone other than me."
"I don't have a temper."
He raised a brow. "I have known a fair number of people with tempers, and yours, Irene Towers, ranks among the finest of them."
"Like Aelin Galathinius?"
A shadow passed over him. "She would have greatly enjoyed the sight of Hasar flipping into the pool."
"Is she really marrying that Fey Prince?"
"Maybe. Likely."
"Are you upset about it?"
And though she asked it casually, that healer's mask a portrait of calm curiosity, he selected his words carefully. "Aelin was very important to me. She still is, though in a different way. And for a while, it was not easy to change the dreams I'd planned for my future, especially the dreams with her."
Irene angled her head, the lantern light dancing in her soft curls. "Why?"
"Because when I met Aelin, when I fell in love with her, she was not... She went by another name, another title and identity, and things between us fell apart before I knew the truth, but I think I knew. When I learned she was truly Aelin, I knew that between her and Dorian, I..."
"You would never leave Otterlin, or him."
He fiddled with the cane beside him, running his hands over the smooth wood. "She knew it too, I think. Long before I did. But she still... She left at one point. It's a long story, but she went off to Wendlin alone. And that was where she met Prince Rowan. And out of respect to me, because we had not truly ended it, she waited. For him. They both did. And when she came back to Rifthold, it ended. Between us, I mean. Officially. Badly. I handled it badly, And she did too, and it just... We made our peace before we parted ways months ago, and they left together, as it should be. They are... If you ever meet them, you'll get it. Like Hasar, she isn't an easy person to be with, to understand. Aelin frightens everyone.
He snorted.
But not him. I think that's why she fell in love with him, against her best intentions. Rowan beheld all Aelin was and is, and he was not afraid.
Irene was quiet for a moment. But you were?
It was a rough period for me. Everything I knew was trampled. Everything. And she... I think I placed the blame for a great deal of it upon her. Began to see her as a monster.
Is she?
It depends on who's telling the story, I suppose.
Kaol studied the intricate pattern of the red and green rug beneath his boots.
But I don't think so. There is no one else that I would trust to handle this war. No one else I would trust to take on all of Morath, but Aelin, even Dorian. If there's some way to win, she'll find it. The costs might be high, but she'll do it.
He shook his head.
And it's your birthday. We should probably talk of nicer things.
Irene didn't smile. You waited for her while she was gone, didn't you? Even knowing what... who she really was. He hadn't admitted it, even to himself. His throat tightened.
Yes.
She now studied that woven carpet beneath them. But you... you don't still love her?
No,
he said, and had never meant anything more. He added softly,
or Nezrin.
Her brows rose at that, but he wrapped a hand around the cane, groaning softly as he pushed to his feet and made his way toward her. She tracked each movement, unable to set aside the healing, her eyes darting over his legs, his middle, the way he gripped the cane. Kaol halted a step away, pulling a small bundle out of his pocket. Silently, he extended it to her, the black velvet like the rippling dunes beyond them. What's that? He only held out the folded piece of fabric.
They didn't have a box I liked, so I just used the cloth.
Irene took it from his hand, her fingers shaking slightly as she folded back the edges of the bundle that he'd been carrying all day. In the lantern light, the silver locket shimmered and danced as she lifted it up between her fingers, eyes wide. I can't take this.
You'd better,
he said, as she lowered the oval locket into her palm to examine it.
I had your initials carved onto it.
Indeed, she was already tracing the swirling letters he'd asked the jeweler in Antica to engrave on the front. She turned it over to the back. Irene put a hand to her throat, right over that scar. Mountains and seas, she whispered.
So you never forget that you climbed them and crossed them. That you, only you, got yourself here.
She let out a small, soft laugh, a sound of pure joy. He couldn't let himself identify the other sound within it.
I bought it,
Kaol clarified instead.
So you could keep whatever it is you always carry in your pocket inside. So you don't have to keep moving it from dress to dress. Whatever it is.
Surprise lighted her eyes. You know?
I don't know what it is, but I see you holding something in there all the time.
He'd calculated that it was small and based the locket's size upon it. He'd never seen an indentation or weight in her pockets to suggest its bulk, and had studied other objects she'd placed within there while working on him. Papers, vials, against the utter flatness of it. Perhaps it was a lock of hair, some small stone.
It's nothing as fine as a party in the desert.
No one has given me a gift since I was 11.
Since her mother.
A birthday gift, I mean, she clarified. She slid the locket's fine silver chain over her head, the links catching in the stray, luscious curls. He
He watched her lift the mass of her hair over the chain, setting it dangling down to the edges of her breasts. Against the honey brown of her skin, the locket was like quicksilver. She traced her slim fingers over the engraved surface. Kaol's chest tightened as she lifted her head, and he found silver lining her eyes.
Thank you,
she said softly. He shrugged, unable to come up with a response. Irene only walked over, and he braced himself, readied himself as her hands cupped his face, as she stared into his eyes.
I am glad, she whispered, that you do not love that queen, or Nesrin.
His heart thundered through every inch of him. Irene rose onto her toes and pressed a kiss, light as a caress, to his mouth, never breaking his stare. He read the unspoken words there. He wondered if she read the ones not voiced by him, either.
I will cherish it always,
Irene said, and he knew she wasn't talking about the locket, not as she lowered a hand from his face to his chest, atop his raging heart.
No matter what may befall the world.
Another feather-like kiss.
No matter the oceans, or mountains, or forests in the way.
Any leash on himself snapped. Letting his cane thump to the floor, Kaol drifted a hand around her waist, his thumb stroking along the sliver of bare skin the dress revealed. The other he plunged into that luxurious, heavy hair, cupping the back of her head, as he tilted her face upward. As he studied those brown gold eyes, the emotions simmering in them.
I am glad that I do not love them either, Irene Towers,
he whispered onto her lips. Then his mouth was on hers, and she opened for him, the heat and silk of her driving a groan from deep in his throat. Her hands speared into his hair, onto his shoulders, across his chest and up his neck, as if she could not touch enough of him. Kaol reveled in the fingers she dug into his clothes, as if they were claws seeking purchase. He slid his tongue against hers, and her moan as she pushed herself against him. Kaol backed them toward the bed, its white sheets near glowing in the lantern light, not caring that his steps were uneven, staggering. Not with that dress little more than cobwebs and mist. Not when he never took his mouth from hers, remained unable to take his mouth from hers. Irene's knees hit the mattress behind them, and she drew her lips away enough to protest.
You're back.
I'll manage.
He slanted his mouth over hers again, her kiss searing him to his very soul.
His. She was his.
And he had never had anything he could call such, wanted to call such. Kaol couldn't bring himself to rip his mouth away from Irene's, long enough to ask if she considered him hers. To explain that he already knew his own answer, had perhaps known from the moment she'd walked into that sitting room, and did not look at him with an ounce of pity or sadness. He nudged her with a press of his hips, and she let him lay her upon the bed gently, reverently. Her reach for him, hauling him atop her, was anything but. Kaol huffed a laugh against her warm neck, the skin softer than silk, as she scrabbled with his buttons, his buckles. She writhed against him, and as he settled his weight over her, every hard part of him lining up with so many soft parts of her, he was going to fly out of his skin. Irene's breath was sharp and ragged against his ear, her hands tugging desperately at his shirt, trying to slide to his back beneath.
I'd think you were sick of touching my back.
She shut him up with a plundering kiss that made him forget language for a while. Forget about his name, and his title, and everything but her. Irene. 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 She moaned when he slid a hand up her thigh, baring her skin beneath the folds of that gown. When he did it to the other leg. When he nipped at her mouth and traced idle circles with his fingers over those beautiful thighs, starting along their outer edge and arcing over. Irene did not appreciate being toyed with. Not as she wrapped a hand around him and his entire body bowed into the touch, the sensation of it. Not just a hand stroking over him, but Irene doing it.